Good afternoon, everyone. Thank you for listening to Lakeshore Public Radio at 89.1 FM on the dial and streaming worldwide at lakeshorepublicradio.org. It's time for Midwest Beats with yours truly, Tom Lounges, as your host. This program is all about music and the people who make it. But coming up sooner than later, just a few minutes down the pike here, guitarist Brian Wheat of the iconic 80s and 90s rock group Tesla will be joining us by phone to talk about his new book, Son of a Milkman, My Crazy Life with Tesla. It's all coming up, along with a couple Tesla classics after this. Good afternoon, everybody. I'm Tom Lounges, and it's time for Midwest Beats, a program all about music and the people who make it. Well, coming up second hour, Andrew Stern and Laura Arias, who were my guests live on Tuesday, we're going to repeat that show. They're in a duo called Three Pairs of Boots, and yes, we'll explain why there's a third pair of boots in our interview. They're an Americana group out of San Francisco, and we'll play some of their music, and we'll introduce you to them and to their cooking show. So be sure to stick around if you're into Americana music, cooking, or just good conversation. That's coming up in hour two from 2 to 3 p.m. Coming up in just a few minutes, we will be getting on the phone Mr. Brian Wheat. He's the bassist of the iconic 80s and 90s rock group Tesla. We'll talk about Brian's new book, Son of a Milkman, My Crazy Life with Tesla. Well, as the subtitle suggests, he's had a crazy time, and we're going to talk about some of that. In the 209 pages of Son of a Milkman, you'll find it's a quick and easy read with 8 pages of color photos from throughout Brian's life. It comes to us courtesy of Post Hill Press, and we'll be talking with Brian momentarily. But right now, let's let the music do the talking and take you back to one of their big ones, one of my favorites from the Tesla catalog, Giddy Up! It's that Modern Day Cowboy.
Down and
Giddy up. I'm Lounges. It's time for Midwest Beat here on Lakeshore Public Radio. Thanks for listening. Riding in like a modern-day cowboy there, Tesla, as we welcome bass guitarist Brian Wheat, founding member of the iconic 80s and 90s rock group Tesla. He's here to talk about a brand-new book, Son of a Milkman. I love the title. Son of a Milkman, My Crazy Life with Tesla, on Post Hill Press at 209 pages. It's a quick and easy read, and there's some great color photos as well. Brian, are you with us?
Yeah, hey, how you doing?
Doing good. It's been a long time since I've talked with you. I'm going to refresh your memory on how one of the instances where we met. You were playing, I was your MC for a couple of different shows here in the Midwest, and you were playing a show at Star Plaza Theater, and you might remember when the guy fell off the balcony and landed on the two girls?
Absolutely,
yeah. I was your MC that time.
His beer was falling.
Yep.
So he was going after his beer.
He was going after the beer. I don't think he spilled a drop, but he sure hurt the girls. And I was just getting ready to bring you guys on stage, and I got the call and said, hold the show. And I peeked around the red corner, and I didn't realize at the time, but you guys were kind of peeking around the red curtain as well. And people said it looked like the Three Stooges because it was like all the heads above the curtain peeking out. That was one of the comments that stuck with me. But one of the things about Tesla that I respected a lot after that show was the fact that that you reached out, and so did Jeff, to see how those girls were doing. I remember it was a couple of weeks later we got calls over there, and they said, just want to find out how those girls were. And, of course, they recovered okay, but I thought that was classy that you guys cared so much about your fans.
Well, you know, plus we'd never seen anything like that happen before, you know.
Mm-hmm.
I think we actually met the girl the next time we came through. Yeah, didn't she break her collarbone or something?
Yep. Yeah, thank goodness that part of them bounced off the chairs because he didn't have the full weight on the girls. But, yeah, one broke her collarbone. The other one was had something else sprained, a shoulder or something. But
he didn't get hurt at all, did he?
Nope. He bounced back up.
Caught his beer and had a sip and was ready to start the show.
We were delayed about 35 minutes, I think. But I remember
I remember that
vividly.
I remember that exactly. Yeah.
I figured you would. So let's talk about some of the stuff that's in your book, Son of a Milkman, My Crazy Life with Tesla. And again, in 209 pages, there is a lot of craziness between the cover and cover. One of the things I've got to wonder is there's a lot of dysfunction in the book, which you're very, very open about within the band members. Uh-huh. But yet you guys continued to create an incredible body of music and recordings. I'm trying to figure out how you were so creative in the midst of the hurricane. I mean, it was crazy indeed.
When you're in the eye of the storm, you know, it's the calmest part, you know,
mm-hmm.
The eye of the hurricane is the calmest part. So we were in the middle of it. You know, we weren't sure. We had, you know, the point I was trying to illustrate was that, you know, we were survivors and we've gone through a lot of stuff in our career. And we all have our share of problems. But we kept going. And, you know, we were fine when we were making music. That's the one thing we do best.
Mm-hmm.
It's, you know, when we have to do anything else, from a business meeting to making a set list or anything like that, you know, we have very strong opinions. And, you know, there was a wild time, and, and that's when we broke up. And that's kind of what I, you know, allude to, was that all kind of came to a head in 95 when we broke up. And then when we got back together in 2000, we started to figure out that some of the things we were doing weren't working anymore.
Mm-hmm.
And we quit those. And unfortunately for one guy, you know, he never could make that transition into kind of a more stable, calmer situation. And that's when, you know, he left again.
Right.
So, but, you know, today we're fine. You know, we're going on our almost into our our fourth decade of being together. So, you know, it works. You know, Queen used to argue and bicker a lot too, and they managed to make all that great music in the middle of all that as well. So,
right, right.
You know, I don't think we're the only band that had, you know, dysfunction. I don't think it was as dysfunctional as maybe you may think. I mean, you know, I just say that, look, we all had drug problems and we all had attitudes. And, you know, the one thing that we always agreed on was Tesla.
Okay. Now, are you guys are still out there touring from time to time. Are you going to be doing any more recording? Is there any process? Obviously, it's been kind of a crazy year than 2020.
I mean, we just put out a new album in 2019. And, you know, we still tour, you know, anywhere from 70 to 100 shows a year, every year. So as soon as this COVID thing is lifted off, we'll be back playing. And then I imagine after we play for a while, we'll sit down and address making another record at some point in time.
Okay.
But we had just put out the Shock album in 19, and then we put out the Live at Abbey Road thing in 20, which came out the day they locked us all down, actually.
Right. Yeah, so, I'd heard about that one.
Yeah, so, you know, we've been pretty productive in that sense. So I think we need to get out there and blow off some steam and play some shows.
With the tours, you have been packaged many times with Def Leppard, and Joe Elliott does the foreword on your book. And when you read the book, you realize that there is a kinship, a real friendship and bond between your two bands. How did that all start? Explain that briefly for my listeners so they can get a gist of this.
Well, it started when we were working on our first album. We had just put it out, and we went to Europe to do some promotion and play like three or four shows. And Peter Mench, our manager, Def Leppard were just finishing up the Hysteria album in Holland. So Phil and Steve and Rick all came down to the show in Amsterdam. And that's when we met them. And then they got up on stage and played with us the you know, the encore. We did Rock of Ages. So we had met those three, and then we went out with them that night, just had a blast going around, you know, after the show, hanging out, carrying on and stuff. And then we started their European or their English tour. And we became, you know, real friendly with them then. But ironically, me and Joe didn't really see each other at that point in time. And it wasn't until we got to America on that tour that we were in rehearsals for the American tour, the first In the Round tour. And Joe happened to be in the room next to me and Frank. And one night after rehearsals or whatever, he heard us in there and he knocked on the door and he came in and we start playing Wing songs, Paul McCartney and Wing songs. And that's how me and Joe bonded. We bonded over Paul McCartney and Wings. And from that day on, you know, that whole tour that I was on, that we were on with him, I always hung out with Joe Elliott. You know, we'd go to the movies, we'd go to the shopping mall, we'd hang out at the gigs, we'd play, you know, soccer or football. I tried to show him how to throw a baseball. He couldn't do it. And he just became like this kind of mentor to me. He took me under his wing, and he became like a surrogate big brother. And that friendship and that bond has been there since 1987. And, you know, even though we don't talk to each other all the time, when we do, it's like we never miss a beat. When we see each other, it's like we never miss a beat. So, you know, he's a very special person to me, Joe Elliott. And I think he, you know, he likes me. He views me like a little brother, even though he just said he's never had a brother. I think he's the only child. I'm his troubled little brother. And when I need advice, I call him in the middle of the night. Well, he,
I like this forward. It was pretty cool the way he's talked about how you both have different views of a memory, but he's going to let you slide because it's your book.
Oh, yeah, the foot rage.
Yeah.
The foot rage, yeah. Yeah, so, he won. I mean, he's about 8 inches taller than me, and it's all in his legs. So, of course, he won. But he didn't win by much.
Okay.
Yeah, he didn't win by much.
What was it that at this point, obviously we're all reaching a certain age, I'm a little older than you are, but we all get to a point in our life where we kind of look back and see all the great memories and some of the mistakes we made, and you know, you put them all down in this book, Son of a Milkman. What made you say, this is the time for me to clear the air, set the record straight, do a little self-therapy, if you will, you know, be cathartic and put my life out there? Why was this the right time, and how hard was it for you to actually sit and do this?
Well, you know, it's funny because you kind of hit it on the head, the whole reason for the book. It was kind of like take a self-inventory and you know, do some healing and, you know, make some amends and all that kind of stuff. But it was when I turned 50,
okay,
which was 8 years ago. So the one thing is that, you know, everyone said, oh, did you, you know, you wrote this book during your time off in COVID. No, that the book was done. I was working on the cover when that finally came out. And then we had an earlier release date, which got pushed back because of COVID.
Mm-hmm.
So I started the book when I was about 50. And it went through a couple different versions before I got to the one that it is now. Because at first it was going to be kind of the history of, you know, the band and stuff. And it's not really, I mean, the band's in there.
Right.
It's in there. But it's also more of a history of me and, you know, how I grew up and how I was the illegitimate son of the milkman and how I've struggled with weight issues and bulimia and anxiety and depression, and, you know, colitis, and, you know, how I managed to deal with all those things and still be in a rock band. And still, I think, have a pretty good quality of life.
Mm-hmm.
So that was the whole underlying thing of the whole book, is that no matter what obstacles come in front of you in life, you've got to find a way to get around them or plow through them or go over them, whatever. And so it started when I was 50, because I figured at that time I was old enough and the band had been a band for almost 30 years, that if someone wanted to read a book by a guy in a band for 30 years, that maybe they might want to hear it.
Mm-hmm.
Because to do it any time earlier than that, you know, who would have cared?
Right. Yeah, we see a lot of the younger artists putting a book out, their memoirs, after they've been in the business 5 years, and it's like, why? But with this, it's been out since December, and again, it's on Post Hill Press. What kind of response have you gotten, either from readers or from the band members? Any kind of feedback?
Well, from the readers, it's been great. The book's doing, you know, really well. They love it, and, you know, the one thing that always comes back is everyone really appreciates the honesty of the book. My band members, I don't think any of them have read it, you
okay.
know, to be honest. I mean, they all knew I was putting it out, and I went over a couple of things with Frank, because we did a lot of, you know, stuff together when we were young,
mm-hmm.
you know, and he was like, yeah, right, that's fine, don't worry about it, you know, because I was worried about maybe what some of their kids might think, you know,
right.
about the drugs and stuff, and he's like, hey, my kids knew I did drugs, I didn't lie to them. And Jeff told me to write whatever I wanted, that it was all true. And I think, I don't know that Troy's read the book. You know, he just wanted to make sure me and him were all right. And I said, me and you are fine. I said, you know, I just talk about in the book that we had a hard time in, you know, the first couple of years, or, well, first 10 or 15. I mean, we've been together 36.
Right.
So, you know, when I say those kind of things in the book, it's like, yeah, that was happening in 1993. It's not happening in 2021.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we got it all out of our system. We managed to work through it. So the response has been really good. Really good.
Okay. Now, it's available on hardback. That's what I've got. Is it coming out on paperback? And I assume it's in Kindle as well, correct?
It is in Kindle. I don't know about paperback, and I know this week I'm finishing up the audio version of it.
Oh, okay. You're narrating it yourself?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, and that's kind of hard because I don't read very well. So there's a lot of stumbling going on. I'm good in this kind of situation where, you know, someone asks me a question. Mm-hmm. I'm doing an interview and stuff, I can roll. But when I have to read it off the page, it's like, hey, wait a minute. You know what I mean? Because it's not like I know it by heart.
Right, right.
But it's just taking a little longer than I think they wanted. But, you know, I think it has to be in my voice. You don't want, you know.
Right.
Because the book's written in my voice. I mean, it is definitely me speaking in the book. And that's another thing that people have said. They said it. Reading the book's like sitting down and just having a conversation with you. You know, we like that it's written in that form. So, but I should finish that Tuesday. I think I'm done with the audio portion of my audio portion of it. Yeah.
When it came time to sit down and reevaluate and take that self inventory, obviously you mentioned you talked to the guys about things you weren't clear on or whatever to make sure everybody was good on everything. But did you keep a notepad, a diary, or anything that you referred to?
No. All memory.
Wow.
Yeah, no. I didn't keep any notepad at all. I just kind of, you know, started at the beginning and kind of went in a chronological order.
Mm-hmm.
And just went back to, I think, you know, my earliest memory of listening to a Beatle record, which was Revolver, to, you know, up to COVID. So I just kind of remembered it. But, I didn't remember the thing about the guy falling out of the balcony. So
I was wondering if that was going to make it in the book. When I got the call that you had the book out, I'm like, I wonder if he's going to mention that, because that had to be like a one-of-a-kind situation.
It was, and it should have been in the book, you know. And you know, that just goes to show you there's some things that you just forget about.
Mm-hmm.
So, but having refreshed my memory on it, absolutely, I would have put it in the book. I would have told a little story about it.
Now, you mentioned Revolver being having an impact on you as your first Beatle record, and you talk about Paul McCartney in this, and you just mentioned that you and Joe were playing Wings stuff in the beginning. So there's definitely a strong connection there. Now, you met Paul, and you had a face-to-face, or should we say bass-to-bass encounter. What was that like for you? And you guys have stayed in touch, correct?
Well, no, not really.
Okay.
So, I mean, I'm of the opinion on the eighth day God created Paul McCartney. So that shows you how high I regard him.
Mm-hmm.
I met him. I was in England. And that same time I met Def Leppard doing that promotion for the first album. And it just happened that day, you know, I was at Geffen Records, which was around the corner from his office, MPL. I happened to be walking through the park, which was Soho Park, which is right where his office is. And as I'm walking through the park, I look up in the third floor of this building, that beautiful Art Deco building. It happens to be his building, and there he is. So I'm pretty convinced that it was a gift from God to me. And I saw him, and he saw me, and I gave him the peace sign, and he gave me the peace sign back, and you know, I kind of motioned, are you coming down? He said, you know, in a few minutes. So I waited and came down. I went up and started, you know, came out. And there was a few people around by that time.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like they had sixth sense. They knew he was around. And I got to talk to him for a few minutes. And I said, you know, look, I'm in a band on Geffen Records. And we're over here and we're playing the Marquee Club. And he said, well, you know, a lot of people get started there. And I said, well, yeah. And he said, you know, good luck. And I said, you know, thank you for all the music, man. And he went, hey, my pleasure. And then I met him one other time in Sacramento, where I'm from. The girl that used to do our wardrobe does his wardrobe for many years.
Mm-hmm.
So she invited us down to the show, which I was going to go anyways, because I always go see him. And we were sitting in wardrobe, me and my wife with Allie, and he just walked into a wardrobe, and he said, "Hi, Allie, who's your friend?" She said, "This is Brian and Monique. He's in a band called Tesla." He went, "Oh, hey, great. Are you the singer?" I said, "No, I'm a bass player like you, man. I play Hofner bass, just like you do." He went, "Great." And we talked about his drummer, Denny Sywell, and
yeah.
This, you know, on Uncle Albert and Wings and all that stuff. And
right.
It was really, really cool. And those are the only two times I met him. But we don't have a friendship. Now, I think maybe where you get that is me and Jimmy Page have a friendship. We're friends.
Yeah, you talk about going out to dinner with Jimmy. And
Me and Jimmy are very, you know, we're good friends. And we talk on the phone, we text, we see each other, we buy each other silly little, you know, gifts, records, whatever. And that's a real friendship. And, you know, I only have two friends in a rock band. One is Joe Elliott, and the other is Jimmy Page. All my other friends are, you know, from different walks of life.
Right.
So I don't really hang out with people in rock bands, per se. You know, I mean, you see them and they're acquaintances, and you might talk to them backstage and stuff. But, you know, I wouldn't really say, you know, I've never been out to dinner with another guy in a rock band outside of the guys in Def Leppard.
Mm-hmm. One of the things I liked in the book about when you were talking about Jimmy Page is how he turned you on to vinyl. You were a CD digital guy, and he said, "Hey, listen to this album." I run a couple of vinyl record stores, and I love that part. That stuck out to me, and I thought, that's the kind of endorsement we need in the record store business, is Jimmy Page saying, "Buy vinyl." And
he's a vinyl fanatic. And he's like, "CDs suck, you know?" And I'd go to England, you know, and I'd be out with him and Ross, my friend, and they'd go, "We're going vinyl." And I go, "Okay, look, I'm going to go to this comic. I'm going to go to this coffee shop, and when you're done, we'll meet over here." And then one night I was at Jimmy's house. Me and Monique, my wife, went to pick him up. We were going to dinner, and he happened to have, we were sitting in his living room, and he happened to have just a simple little stereo system, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And he put on Johnny Burnett Rock and Roll Trio, the original
Train Kept Rollin'. Yeah.
And he put that on vinyl, man, and it just blew me away. And I went, "You know what? He's absolutely right." And I went, "You know, Jimmy, I get it." And then I just started on this vinyl thing. And then me and him go to all, you know, we go to these record store fairs together. And every time I see him in London, you know, there's always a day or two of going out and you know, scouring for vinyl. And he's got a massive collection.
I can imagine.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. He's very meticulous about his vinyl.
That said, are we going to see the Tesla catalog converted to vinyl like we're seeing with so many others? AC/DC stuff, Black Sabbath, they're all starting to convert it back to 180 gram.
Well, I mean, a lot of it's on vinyl. Mm-hmm. You know, the first, I know Psychotic Supper, Great Radio, Mechanical Resonance is. Busted Out isn't. I think Five Man Acoustic Jam is. Or, you know, there's old versions. I think they need to reissue it. I mean, I think Universal, who has the main bulk of the catalog, should re-put it out in vinyl and, you know, maybe remaster or something. But mm-hmm. Who knows? That's up to them. You never know with that company.
It'd be great to have reel-to-reel on vinyl. That is such a great
album.
Well,
that's the one thing that I actually am in charge of. Because
okay.
The last, from 2005 on, is when we started our own label. So I am going to put reel-to-reel out on vinyl. And I, you know, was wanting to do it on a record store day. You know, put one out, put reel-to-reel one day, and then the next. Because there's two a year, right?
Right.
And then the next record store, they put out vinyl too.
Yeah, April and November usually.
Yeah, that usually, I mean, that will be coming soon.
Okay.
So just got to get that together.
You did Thank You on Reel to Reel as Zeppelin. Mm-hmm. And was that your choice? How did you guys decide? I just want to, that was one of my favorite records as far as cover records. A lot of the 80s bands did that, but they kind of like, eh, it was kind of called in. Yours seemed passionate.
I think we did a pretty cool version.
Oh, I lost you. Hello?
Are you there?
Oh, now I'm there. Yeah, now I got you.
Here's the thing. I got to give a lot of credit to Tom Zukoc for that, because Tom is the guy that signed this to Geffen, and I talk about him a lot in the book.
Mm-hmm.
And this was one of those periods where he was back in our life, and he was kind of managing us for a while. And he said, you know, look, we should do this covers record. And at the time, we had just got Dave Root in the band, because Tommy
had left for the right. Party.
For the final time, and so we thought, okay. So he kind of was like a school teacher, right? He used to play these little like games, and he said, "Let's pretend that it's the '70s, and there's no Pro Tools, and there's no automated recording consoles,
mm-hmm.
and there's only one tape machine, because you know, for a while we would sync up 2 and 3 tape machines,
right."
He had digital recorders. We said, okay. And we said, okay, then let's do this based upon the music that was being made at that time. So we went to the 70s and the mid-70s. And we said, okay. You know, the late 60s to the mid-70s.
Mm-hmm.
And it was songs, rock songs from people, you know, at that time. Now, I picked I Got a Feeling, obviously.
Okay.
But, you know, you went there, you said, you got to have a Stones song, you got to have a Beatles song, you got to have a Zeppelin song, you got to have a Queen song. Now, that's where we just could not pull off a Queen song. We tried a couple of them,
mm-hmm.
and we just couldn't do it. You know, Tesla couldn't. I think we probably could have did Spread Your Wings or something, because Jeff and me really like that. But for whatever reason, you know, We tried. I think Keep Yourself Alive.
You're fading in and out again. Are you moving by chance?
Not really. I'm just in the middle of Texas.
Oh,
how's that? Is that better?
Yeah, that's better.
Okay. So we tried a Queen song. You know, a couple different Queen songs didn't work. But with that Reel to Reel thing, we went in the morning. We were there like 28 days. We recorded 28 songs. We learned the song in the morning, whatever it was. We said, okay, tomorrow we're going to do Sly Stone. I Want to Take You Higher. And by the end of the day, we had the track.
Wow.
And that's how that record came about. It was, you know, no one was playing separate. We all played live, you know. So it's essentially a live album in the studio.
Mm-hmm. A lot of those cover albums that were done then, Metal Blade and all these different labels were putting out all these 80s guys and putting them together, and it just didn't quite have the magic. This, like I said, it's got a passion to it, and that explains it. You guys were all there together doing songs you loved, and the choices on there. I mean, the Temptations, Ball of Confusion, UFO, Rock Bottom. UFO were huge here in the Midwest.
Well, UFO were a big influence on me. You know, that's the other thing. I play a Hofner bass because of Paul McCartney.
Right.
I play a Gibson Thunderbird bass
because
of Pete Way.
Right. We just lost.
And you know, Pete, you know, I always mention Jimmy and Chuck. Pete was a dear friend of mine. And I forget to mention Pete. But he was the only other guy that was in a rock band that was a friend of mine. I would see Pete. He would come and stay with me at my house. I would go out to dinner with him, and I saw him just before he died, and I'm glad I was able to.
Mm-hmm.
He was a sweet, sweet man, and he was a big influence on a lot of bass players. You know, from me to Steve Harris to Nikki Sixx.
Right.
You know, Pete Way was very influential, and people don't talk about really that he was actually a pretty good bass player. They kind of make light of his bass playing because of his antics.
Right.
He actually was a really good
thing. Oh, hold on. I'm losing you again. I don't want to lose the three guys.
You there?
Yeah, I'm here now. I hear you now. Pete Way,
you made it. You're in a band with Joe Elliott and Jimmy Page.
All right.
You're doing okay, buddy.
Very good. I know you've got to get running here soon. Is there anything we haven't talked about, Brian, that you would like to, that we have not touched on?
No. I mean, look, we talked about the book, and that's kind of what I'm doing right now, promoting. You know, I've got some, when the book's done, I'm going to put out a bunch of Soul Motor stuff, which is my other alter ego band that I've had since 1999.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm going to be putting that stuff out. Tesla's chomping at the bit to get back out and play. You know, we really want to. It's not up to us, though, unfortunately. It's up to the promoters. The promoters got to put the shows up for us to play them.
Right.
So, you know, we miss playing very much. We miss doing what we do. And when this whole thing lifts and we get back to normal, we'll resume where we left off. You know, we're not going away. People said, are you going to break up over after COVID? I'm like, hell no. Why would we do that?
Yeah.
You know, we've been through all kinds of stuff. You know, COVID's just another little obstacle that we've got to get over, that, we've had all kinds of shit happen to this band over the years.
Right. Right.
And, we broke up once and we couldn't do that right either. So, you know, we tried that for 5 years.
Right.
And
right.
We couldn't do that. So we know what we do good, and that's play music together. Put us in a room or on a stage and give us our instruments and say, play.
And it's all good.
And it's all good.
One last thing. I know you have your own studio, and you've been doing a lot of engineering and production and rentals to other artists. Is there anything forthcoming that we should know about, that we should watch for?
Well, I have a small company called J Street Entertainment, and it's a development company. And I take young bands, and I develop them. You know, I do old school A&R like Tom Zusat used to do with us.
Mm-hmm.
And I have a band called Chase Engel on the Night Shift out of Saginaw, Michigan that'll be coming out soon. I got another band called On Off out of Redding, California that'll be coming out soon. I got this kid in England named Alex that's just a young kid. He's just amazing talent. He'll as soon as he can get in the country, you know, America will get turned on to him.
Right.
You know, I got a Soul Motor record come out on that label at that company. So I'm doing lots of stuff like that. It's just finding young artists that get it, you know, and you say, look, I want to help you. I want you not to have to make the same mistakes I had to learn the hard way. And, you know, this is how you make records the right way. You know, this is what you should be doing based on what I was taught when I was a kid by the guys that were masters, like Tom Zutat was a master A&R guy.
Right. A&R is a lost art, and sadly...
It's a lost art, and no one does it. And that's, you know, and ironically, that's what I've been doing, and Frank Cannon's been doing the same thing. So, you know, he's got some young bands he's working with, and hopefully we'll crack a couple of these, because there needs to be a new breed of rock bands that come out.
Right. Right. There's the sad thing is a lot of these younger artists have this attitude of instant gratification, and the labels have nurtured that. If you don't have a hit with the first album, you're done. It's not like the days of Zeppelin or Montrose or anyone else where you had three albums or four albums to prove yourself. It's cut and run now, and I'm glad to hear that you and Frank are doing that.
I'll be there at 2:00. Okay. Yeah, no, we're that's what we're doing. You know, me and Frank have kind of... And, you know, me and Frank, that's the thing, you know. Me and Frank started this band, mm-hmm. you know, when we were kids. And we've always been on the same page, me and Frank. And, you know, he's like my baby brother. And, you know, it's just we have so many things in common, and then we're completely opposite on other things.
Right.
So he's got some really good bands. I got some really good artists, and great. And now Troy's actually getting into that end of it as well. He was playing me a guy he'd been working with the other day. It was fantastic stuff.
Hmm.
So, you know, Jeff's just at home raising his son, waiting to get back out and play. And Dave's at home raising his son and, you know, giving guitar lessons online, Skype. So everyone's staying busy.
Okay. Now, will we keep up with everything at TeslaTheBand.com? Is that the best place to find out things about the tours, the recordings, yeah, and also your side projects?
Yeah, either TeslaTheBand.com or TeslaTheBand Facebook
okay.
or Instagram. And, yeah, you find out things about side projects. Any news that has to relate with Tesla will come up at any one of those places.
All right. Well, Brian, thank you so much for your time. I appreciate it. I'm glad we finally got together. I know last time we were scheduled, you were having a problem in the middle of the blizzard in Texas there. And
yeah.
We made it happen.
Long story short, I've lived in California my whole life in Sacramento. Well, I moved to Texas 4 years ago. And then we had an issue with rattlesnakes and tornadoes and all that stuff. So I decided we had to find, and because we have Jack Russells, we have three of them.
Mm-hmm.
So we moved to upstate New York, the Finger Lakes area by Syracuse. And so we kept the house in Texas. And I said to Monique, well, we'll go to Texas because it'll be warmer in the winter.
Mm-hmm.
And we got here and we had this biggest snowstorm they've had in 100 years. It was -2 here and it was like 28 degrees in Auburn, New York, where our house was.
Right.
Just so much for a warmer winter, huh?
Yeah, exactly. Well, be safe and get back on the road, and we'll see you then. And if you have any of these young bands that you start getting ready to drop albums with or anything, have your people get a hold of me, and we'll do a little spotlight on them, play some of their music.
Absolutely. Appreciate that. Okay.
All right. Thanks for a great book.
Man. Thank you, sir.
All righty. My guest has been Brian Wheat, bass player of Tesla. And again, this is 209 pages, easy read, easy peasy read. And it's chock full of great stuff, great stories, great photos from cover to cover. So check it out on Post Hill Press, available on Kindle, a hardback version, which I heartily recommend. It's got a classic cover of him holding the Hofner bass we talked about, forward by Joe Elliott of Def Leppard. And it's just a good read. And, of course, the band's still together. Watch for them to tour. Tesla, a timeless band that has given us so many great songs. In fact, I'm going to play one now. I opened up the show with Modern Day Cowboy, one of my first introductions to Tesla as a fan. And I have followed their career throughout. So let's do another one of my favorites, since I'm not taking requests today. And we're going to do Edison's Medicine. And then we're going to follow with one of the classic covers off Reel to Reel before I bring in my next guest, Three Pairs of Boots. That'll come up a little after 2 o'clock. So stay with us. This is Midwest Beat on Lake Shore Public Radio. Here's a little dose of Edison's Medicine. Taking a dose of Edison's medicine, it's good for what ails you. Anything by Tesla is good for what ails you. Talk about a great rock and roll band. And, you know, one of the things that that's a shame about Tesla is that they came out at a time when everybody was getting lumped into the MTV hair metal or whatever you wanted to call it. Those guys were straight up rock and roll. Just like Great White. Great White got lumped into that genre as well. And yeah, they were out there at the same time, touring with some of the great guys. But Def Leppard, Cinderella even, Great White, Tesla, those were rock and roll bands. You can keep your hair metal or your pop metal or whatever you want to call that for the Poisons and the Warrants of the world. But I always loved Tesla. They stood out from the pack, and that's one of my favorites. Hopefully it was one of yours. Of course, they got other great ones like Heaven's Trail and Love Song for the Ladies. I used to get a lot of requests as a DJ for Love Song by Tesla. The ladies would always call for it. Mama's Fool, all that. Good stuff. And as we mentioned, when we had Brian Wheat, bass player, co-founder of the band, on just a moment ago, one of the outstanding releases they had were the Reel to Reel albums. They did 20-some songs. They released them as two CDs, and hopefully he's working on getting them released as vinyl for Record Store Day. We're going to tap into one of those in just a moment here and play it. I do want to remind you once again that he's got a new book out on Post Hill Press. It's called Son of a Milkman, My Crazy Life with Tesla. And it is jam-packed with great stories and some cool photos and some testimonials. And, you know, Joe Elliott of Def Leppard writes the foreword on it. And there's stories about going out with Jimmy Page. And his first concert was The Tubes. It was funny because Brian and I both went to our first concerts in 1974. His was The Tubes. Mine was George Harrison and Friends. And, of course, he's a big Beatle nut, too. So it would have been nice to have more time, but I know that he's a busy man, and we have other guests to get to. So maybe next time around we'll talk more about some of the early days as a fan, not just the days of his crazy career, which is documented well in this book. Again, Post Hill Press, Son of a Milkman, My Crazy Life with Tesla. All right, so let's leave you with a final Tesla song, and then we're going to get back into the show. My second guest coming up at just about 2 o'clock will be Andrew Stern and Laura Arias of Three Pairs of Boots. They're a California-based husband and wife duo. Yeah, there's three pairs, but there's only two people. You figure it out. If you don't, well, we'll explain it later. They met on over a singer wanted ad for a band, got married within a year of that encounter, have been making music ever since. And not only do they make albums and make music on their terms, on their own studio, they also do a cooking show, Cooking in Country. And we talk a little bit about that as well. And this was actually taped on Tuesday, and if you missed it, you're going to get a chance to check it out now. At 2 o'clock, Andrew Stern and Laura Arias of Three Pairs of Boots will join me on a repeat encore broadcast of Tuesday's show. But as I mentioned, let's wrap up the Tesla segment. Again, thank you to Brian Wheat and my friends at Chipster for making it happen, and some good memories that I have with those guys over the years. This is off the Reel to Reel. Look for it on vinyl hopefully soon. This is a classic Tesla take on The Tempting Temptations, and it's a song that, well, sadly, it fits today's world as well as it did in the 60s when the Temps put it out. This is Tesla's version of Ball of Confusion. People moving out, people moving in. Yes, let's move into this one and then into the second half. Stay safe, everybody. Chef Nick is coming up after the hour, and I'll see you back on Tuesday. Adios.
Because of the color of the skin. Run, 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 but you sure can't hide. An eye for an eye, a tooth for a tooth. Vote for me and I set you free. Rap on, brother, rap on. Well, the only person talking about love, our brother, is a preacher. And it seems nobody's interested in learning but the teacher. Segregation, termination, demonstration. the heads in the sky. The city's ablaze in the summertime. And the beat goes on. Evolution, revolution, gun control, sound of soul. Shooting rockets to the moon. Kids growing up too soon. Politicians say more taxes will solve everything. And the band played on. So round and around and around we go. Where the world's headed, nobody knows. Can't you hear me talking to you? Just a ball of confusion. Oh, yeah. That's what the world is today. Hey, hey. Fear in the air, tension everywhere. Unemployment's rising fast. The Beatles' new records of gas. And the only safe place to live is on an Indian reservation. And the band played on. Destruction, tax deduction, city inspectors, bill collectors, mod pros in demand, population out of hand, suicide, too many bills, hippies moving to the hills, people all over the world are shouting in the war, and the band.